Morning, everybody. The regular supplemental meetings are called to order. We'd like to go ahead and recess the supplemental meeting. Let's start off with a moment of silence in memory of the members and commissioners who recently passed away. Thank you. Let's now go to the minutes from the March 14th meeting. Do we have any comments or questions on those? If not, we have a motion to approve. A second? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Well, first of all, it's great to see everyone here. Physical presence is great. I know we have a lot to talk about today. We now want to open up for any public comment. Any of our guests or anyone on the phone would like to say something?
But speak on the phone, that's 5-star.
Okay. All right, we've already earned 3 minutes. I think we'll need them. The first item, C1, is the independent actuarial analysis and recommendations to section 2.025 update. Kelly, if you sort of start off and sort of frame what we're going to talk about.
Okay, good morning, everyone. Today's conversation is a continuation of the conversation that started in November when Chiron came in and presented their preliminary report based on the 2022 evaluation, and then they updated that once they had the 2023 evaluation. We've talked about these concepts kind of high level, and there's a lot going on under the surface. And today what I plan to do is go into more of the details than I normally would with the board, and the reason for that is I want to document our thinking, because as we continue to work with the city to try to find some resolution on things, I want to make sure we're all talking about the same thing. So you'll see there's a lot more technical details than normal, but I have them there for a reason, and they're concepts that I've been talking with the city about and trying to negotiate on, and I'm putting them out there as this is where we are today and those things can change. So that's the point of this. I don't expect you all to make a decision about anything today. Just give me your feedback on anything you like or don't like, any information that you need to help you as we move forward with the project.
And Kelly, for a second, it's a very dynamic process. We've had discussions, with the city. We have our responsibility, which is to adopt a plan this year that conforms with the statute, provides, for the 30-year funding. And I would say that overall, the conversations with the city have been very, very positive. And on the item of most consequence, which you sort of think about this as a bridge, and how we span from where we are to where we need to go. The most consequential part of that in concept is completely agreed to, and actually even the details of it are largely common ground. There's still other things of a lot of significance that we still need to work through, but we found so far the city has been great, particularly the Mayor Pro Tem, who I think is a fantastic bridge builder for the city, and I've really enjoyed working with him. And there's still a lot to do, but as Kelly goes into it, we've established priorities, and the item of largest consequence, there's not any dispute over whether that is the primary solution. There's always details that tweak the numbers and allocate risk and so on. Overall, I'm real pleased with where they are, and obviously I'm a broken record on this. Kelly and Josh have done a fantastic job moving this process along. And I also want to say that when Kelly talked about having to hire this independent, or I guess the PRB required us or to hire the Chiron, they've been help bring clarity to something that otherwise could be very chaotic. So really am pleased with the role that they play. And when we talk about their recommendations, you know, they had a blank sheet of paper. They could have proposed whatever they felt like they needed to propose. But I think when I talk about the city and us have a lot of common ground, Chiron was an enabler of that. And I'm really pleased at the role that they've played so far.
Categories of recommendations, it wasn't like
we serve this up as a menu to them or anything, that this was their view of what it took to become compliant, and that they really thought about this beyond what I would call a spreadsheet. You can just work in front of a computer and put together numbers, and those numbers can satisfy some requirement. What I saw, and this was, I was very pleasantly surprised, is that particularly with their recommendations about the COLA, they were really thinking about people and motivations and why people would join and why they would leave and all those sorts of considerations that kind of go beyond the spreadsheet was the flavor that I was actually very surprised that they brought to the table. So it's important to know that that this was their work product that we are all using, and we did not, and they came up with these things, which we're very, very pleased with the direction they take this.
And the requirement of Section 2.025 is that the independent actuary's work is what the board considers in making its recommendation. So I haven't had Siegel, our actuary, rerun everything because I again don't want to set the numbers. But I have talked to Siegel to say, do you have any issues with this? Are you okay with the way these layers are working? And they're, yeah, they think it's creative. Okay, so because I've been hanging out with actuaries a lot, I have a disclaimer page here. So I just wanted to say that the staff recommendations contained in this presentation are not intended to stand alone. Staff recognizes that any agreement with the city would likely be a compromise on the part of both groups, and so each recommendation should not be viewed in a vacuum. There are currently differences on a number of funding and actuarial issues, as well as governance proposals that the city raised. And as such, the staff anticipates that the recommendations may change as the city and DPFC move forward in an attempt to reach an agreement. So all that has to say is today is today, this is today's thinking, the thinking can change tomorrow, later today, based on the conversation that we have or other information, but this is the best information that we have right now. Okay, so here's information that you've seen before. As far as the Chiron's first recommendation, it's to pay on the actuarially determined contribution calculation, the ADC. Chiron presented five acceptable options and ranked them in order of their most preferred to their least preferred. Their most preferred was the traditional, and then they did the three-year step-up, step-down option, the five-year step-up, step-down option, the three-year step-up, and the five-year step-up. The blue on this slide indicates the two options that I'm recommending today. The red is what the city will be recommending late in their meeting later this afternoon. So all of these numbers look pretty similar when you're looking at as big picture with if all assumptions are met. So the funding level drops to 34% under the traditional scenario, that's the lowest it goes, and down to 32% under each of the other options. So not a big difference if you meet all of your assumptions. The funding is projected to reach 70% in 2047 for the first, third, and fifth options above. And then for the two options with the step down, it'll reach 70% 1 year sooner in 2048. Yep. The big improvement with the ADC is the net cash flow for the pension system improves really quickly under all of the options. It's obviously going to improve the fastest. The less you have the step ups in there. Because you're delaying getting to the full ADC. So if you eliminate the step-ups and you go with the traditional, your cash flow will improve quicker. But under all of the methods, it's a significant improvement in the cash flow for the system. The city, as I said, continues to prefer the five-year step-up options. They have said from the beginning they want to put in, about $20 million more a year, and this fits into that number. So they remain on that option.
How far out does the city budget
budget that has the current year projected, or what they anticipate the current year to be, and then they'll adopt what the next year's budget is, and then they have a forecast year. So it's kind of 1 year, and then they have a forecast year.
And you know, once got, you know, kind of my own learning curve of kind of this really sinking in, you know, the ABC is the huge, absolute main priority here. And, you know, the way that I've sort of thought about it is you have, you know, a trip or a voyage, and you have it broken into, say, 30 time increments to get to where you want to go. So you anticipate what those increments will be. But in this case, with a few little caveats, you're going to get to your destination in 30 years. And every year, you're going to course correct. You might speed up. You might, you know, you may have been off course. You do whatever it takes in terms of the funding so that each year you never get behind on that one step, you know, two step, three steps, getting to 30 steps. So if there's this course correction aspect of it, that the amount we can anticipate what it'll be, but it actually will adjust pursuant to the different conditions, not just investment returns, but other actuarial assumptions and things like that. So this concept, where I think we have a meeting in the minds of the city, is the most significant feature of this and the part that gets us the closest to where we need to go.
But I thought when this was being developed, we did take the component of hires out of it because it was something we didn't have control over and could be the number of hires each year. Is that correct? So the way that it, that's a really good segue, Tina. The way that that works is, so the ABC is a combination of the liability that we already have and the money that we need to put in, or that needs to be put into the plan every year for the new the active people that are still working for their 1 year of service. So they're still in there, they're just in a different calculation. So what ends up happening is, well, it's actually here on this chart, so it was a good transition. So on this chart, the little stacked bar over column, I guess, on the left side is how the payment on an annual basis will be made, right? And this is kind of exactly what they're doing now, but flipped. So if you think about what they're doing now, they're paying 34.5% of comp pay, which are elements of payroll. So for this conversation, we're just going to call it payroll. So they're paying a percentage of payroll, which is most of the payment that they pay. But they're also in the statute paying $13 million a year extra. And so they pay us $500,000 every 2 weeks. So they have a small fixed amount now and a large variable amount. And what this is doing, and those were just random. They weren't tied to anything, just kind of what ended up falling out down in Moncton to make the numbers work. Now what Chiron is saying is, let's make these still have a fixed component as well as a variable component. And this makes a lot of sense because what they're doing is they're taking the current unfunded liability, which is about $3.4 billion, and they're amortizing that over the 30-year period. And that's where the big difference is between where the city is and where we are. What's the pattern of that amortization? That's the whole conversation of the step up, step down. So you've got that fixed amount for the current unfunded liability. And then each year, you're actually going to have another fixed amount that goes into that, and that is the layers. And what will happen every year is every year there'll be a gain or a loss in the plan. And that gain or the loss can come from your investment returns being exceeding your investment assumptions or not meeting your assumptions or hiring more people or giving raises that don't match the assumptions, or more people die, or you rehired some people, more people joined the job, or got married, or all those things go into, did you have a gain or a loss? It's not just investments, and everybody thinks it's just investments. I mean, one of the things that's causing some losses right now are the raises that the city's giving it helps the contribution side, but under an ADC model, it's actually going to cause some losses if the raises exceed the payroll assumption. But, you know, that's the technicality. So every year we'll add to that fixed amount a layer, and that layer will be amortized separately. So you're going to have your initial fixed amortization schedule, which won't ever change for the existing liability. And then each year, for the next 30 years, you're going to add a new little layer on there. And it could be a positive layer or a negative layer. And that gets amortized over a different period of time. So that's the UAL part. And then the normal cost, like I said, that part is based on payroll. And right now, the normal cost is about 20.3%. Yeah, 20.3%. The employee pays 13.5% of that. So the city's paying a little over 6% of the normal cost. So if the city wants to add a person in their budget, the way they will calculate that in their budget office is they'll say, I'm hiring, you know, one new police officer, their salary is going to be X, and so I need to budget 6.2% of the salary for their pension amount. They don't have to now budget the whole 34.5% for that person because they're not paying on that. The big payment is for the liability that already exists. If they had no employees at all, that liability still exists. So that's how this works, and I know that's a lot. Chiron goes through in the February 8th presentation on page 49, if you want to read all the details, how the layers work and how the amortization works. I support this method. I believe the city supports this method. It's the step-up, step-down that we're still talking about. So that is good. I just wanted to make sure that I wanted to document our understanding of this is the fixed dollar amount will be paid $126 on a biweekly basis, and the normal cost will be paid on the biweekly basis just like it is. So that's what this page talks about. Sorry for all that. Okay. So some other structural issues. At the city, they've talked about having caps or guardrails, and I thought that we had come to a resolution on that in talking with the city that those weren't necessary. But I see in the presentation that they're giving later today the word guardrails came back into the presentation, so maybe they're not okay with that anymore. I don't know. But the issue with the reason I don't believe guardrails are necessary, and Chiron doesn't believe guardrails are necessary, is because any gains and losses that create those new layers, first of all, those gains and losses get smoothed over a five-year period. So you're only taking 20% of the, let's say you have a loss, 20% of that loss, and then you're amortizing that over 30 years and then 29 years. The lowest you'll ever amortize that 20% of that loss over is a 20-year period. So those are going to really smooth out any swings in the ADC. So we didn't think this was necessary, and I thought we had agreement on that, but maybe we don't. But I would not support the guardrails. It makes things complicated, and it could make it so you actually don't meet your 30-year funding requirement if they're not implemented correctly.
We know what kind of guardrails they're suggesting yet?
They originally were talking about a 5%, not letting the ADC go up more than 5%, but not having a limit on how far it could go down. So only a guardrail on the upside, but never a guardrail on the downside, is what they were talking about before. Okay, I wanted to make this point, and just so if anybody's still around in 10 years, So we all talk about we're going to be 100% funded in 30 years, and that is definitely the goal. And so we all think that means 2055, right? And that does mean 2055 if you meet all of your assumptions. But what is going to happen is if we have, for the first 10 years, when you see your evaluation every year, you're going to see our funding period is 2055 or a lower number. It shouldn't ever show higher than the 2055 number. After 10 years, though, you're now amortizing those new layers over a 20-year period, so that could extend beyond the 2055. So if you're around and somebody says, hey, wait a minute, how is this now funded at 20, 50, 60, you can tell them. That's why. So that's just wanted to point that out. Okay, so my recommendation at this point for the board to consider are, the one that I feel like is in the best interest of the fund is obviously the traditional method. That has no step up in it. It gets the most money into the fund the quickest, obviously. So the best interest of the fund is more money, obviously, sooner. Not a big surprise there. The city has indicated, however, that they have not planned for the contributions to go up, so this would be the most difficult for them to manage in their budget. And they have a list of tax increases and budget cuts in their presentation today if they went to the traditional. And it is a big increase. I acknowledge that completely. And because I understand that, and I've been in their situation where I've had to cut budgets and deal with rising pension costs, I'm also recommending an acceptable option would be the three-year step up, which is actually Chiron's fourth ranked option. And the reason I'm putting this in here is because the step up is minor. In 2025, we're getting 81% of the ADC. 2026, we're getting 92% of the ADC. It does provide some budget relief for the city. The funding level, as I said, doesn't decline that much if we meet the assumptions, and I don't think it's going to decline too much, even if we don't. So that's why I'm recommending that one. On the next page, even though I think I agree with Chiron that the three-year step-up and step-down options, five-year step-down are also better for the pension system than the option I just recommended, the three-year step-up without the step-down. And it just reminds you what that is. So we've got a phase in is a step up. But the step down option is Chiron recommended on a 3-year or 5-year basis to, in the last 5 years, so 2050 to 2055, to reduce the contributions from the city as a percentage. So what that does is it makes the contribution sooner be higher, which is obviously better for us. I'm not recommending these because the city has previously said they didn't like the step down. They didn't agree with the concept. And they felt like it was a problem for their budget. So, you know, recognition of their budgeting issues, I didn't recommend these, you know, step up, step down, even though they're, I think, better options for us than the one I think we can live with. The 5-year step up is the city's preferred option. I've said that before. I'm not recommending that because I think the delay is too long. The city has known since 2017 that they're going to need to put more money in. They have an actuary on staff that we've talked about. They get our evaluations every year. You know, coming. So I think that's kind of keeping the can down the road a little too far. So I'm not recommending that one. This slide I've included because the city has focused a lot on wanting to look at what this is going to cost me in my budget. I'm concerned about my budget. So I've taken a look at what the different options are for kind of the first 5-year period. So the top chart shows the ADC from 2025 to 2030. These are obviously in millions. In the 2024 city budget, they have $184 million budgeted. And the CFO and I have talked, they are committing to pay us $184 million that they have in their budget, even if the actual contributions are a little lower for this period, which we think they might be a little bit lower, maybe $4 million or something. But they wanted to start with that number. So the as-is number today, 2024, city budget, $184. And then in then I have 2025 to 2029, the next 5 years, for four of the five options that we've talked about. The reason I have four of the five options and I'm missing the 3-year step up, step down, is I thought in all of my data, again, thinking we probably have 100 different scenarios going on, I couldn't find in my information a 3-year step up, step down that was done on the same, all of the criteria was the same to make a fair comparison, although in the city presentation they have it, so I don't know if I missed it or they just don't have the same comparison. But anyway, you'll get the idea. So on the traditional, which is the green item, this it would go from 184 to 251, which is, if you go down to the bottom chart, you can see that's a $67 million increase in 1 year. That is a big increase. If you keep going down that traditional column, you see 2026 goes up $5 million. You can see that down below. And in each of those years, it's going up $5 million. Well, the reason that's going up $5 million a year is not because they didn't pay the whole ABC in 2025. They did. But they've now hired more people, and the payroll has gone up. So these numbers at the bottom, well, all the numbers actually on the page, when it goes up year to year, it's not just because the ABC is going up because of the step up, step down. It's because of natural payroll growth. That is what's built in. So that's how that works. The second column is the three-year step-up column. You can see what those numbers are on an annual basis. If you take the five-year period, if we went to the three-year step-up, the system would have $49 million less after 5 years than we would under the traditional level. And you can see how that is phased in. So 2025, the city contribution would go up $26 million, and then it would go up $27 million in 26, and then in 2027 it would go up $28 million, and then you've got you can see the 5 and the 5, that's the payroll. So of that $26 million in 2025, $5 million of that's just from the payroll growth that they were going to have regardless, and the same for each of those years. The next column, and I should have said this before, all of these numbers under the ABC that I'm talking about don't have any changes in the COLA, the current COLA in here, just for comparison purposes. The blue column is the five-year step-up, step-down. If there's a $91 million difference in the first 5 years, you can see that smooths much closer to the city's $20 million increase that they want to stay under. And then there's the five-year step up, which is, again, the city recommended. That gives us $105 million less. And those numbers, what's interesting about those numbers is they're very similar, if you look at the first 5 years, between the five-year step up, the blue column, and the five-year, the step up, step down, and the step up. They're very similar on this page for the first 5 years. But they're dramatically different when you look out different, further, and I'll show you a graph later on that shows that.
Is there a reason why you didn't do it 3 years up and down?
I didn't have the data on the same basis.
Okay.
But you get the idea. You'll see. Because I think that is a viable option. Okay, and some of these charts are repetitive, just so you know. And the reason I did that is sometimes one chart will hit for somebody and it's like for table for somebody else. So it's the same stuff, kind of just in a different lens. So what this table shows is the 3 year step up, step down, the 5 year step up, step down. I'm sorry, the three options, the options I had on the prior page, the 3 year step up, the 5 year step up, step down, and the 5 year step up compared to the traditional. And this is the same information but in a bar chart. So you can see the yellow is the 3 year, the blue is the 5 year up and down, the purple is the 5 year up. And the first set of bars is 2025. You can see how much less is going into the plan versus the traditional in each of the years, and then when it's being made back up again. So I talked to Chiron, right? And I asked him, you've got all of these options that you think are reasonable. But you rank them in your preferred order. So tell me, like, what is the risk? Like, how can we decide what really matters to the fund? And in that conversation, what we talked about is it's not about really the solvency of the fund. Because with the ABC and not having any limits on it, the pension plan is going to be secure. We feel confident of that. What it makes a difference of is really the cash outflows of the fund. Improving that cash outflow sooner is very important. And the reason that it's very important is we have been able to fund, as Brian shows you every month, our net benefit outflows in the past by our private asset sales. And you all know those opportunities are very limited going forward. So in down markets, if we've got more money into the fund, we are more protected from having to sell investments at a bad time, which then enhances our ability to achieve our assumed rate return. So in Chiron's mind, that's why they feel like, that's why they put their assumptions or their recommendations in the order that they did. They feel like to achieve the 6.5% easier, you need to have more protection for the down market so you're not selling investments. That's really where that all came from. Does that make sense? Okay, this is a chart of percentages, and I would like to apologize because I know everybody does not like percentages. But I find it much easier to really see what's going on because it scrubs out the payroll growth. And if you're looking at a whole big number that's in the millions and it's going up every year for 30 years, it's really hard to get a handle on what's really happening with all of these numbers. So what this chart shows you is the 2024 as is. Currently, the city is putting in 39% of payroll. That's a combination of the 34.5% plus the 13 million. It's right now equal to 39%. And then it shows you the percentages here over time. So even though those payroll numbers or those the ADC numbers, if you look at the raw number, it's going up. But it's going up because the payroll is going up, salaries are going up, which will happen in every pension plan. That's just the way it works. So this shows you that under the traditional model, you'll basically be around 52% to start in 2025, goes down to 51%, and then 50 and 49. That'll be about basically 50% of payroll is what the city's contribution will be instead of 34.5% plus the 13 million. If you do the step up, step down, you can see the years here in 2025 and 2026 in yellow where it's being, or orange, where it's lower, and that's for the artificial, you know, budget relief there. And what that does is it makes those numbers in the future, I mean, you've got to make up that money somewhere, so it's kind of pushing that out. So it raises the ADC by a percent or two, or a percent, I guess, in each of those years, having the three-year step up. The step up, step down in the blue, you can see where the numbers are fading up to get to the percentage. And then you see at the tail end there where they're going down. And what that does is it really compresses everything into the center 20 years. And that pushes things to 53% and 52%. So that's where that is. The five-year step up increases it, it just really, it increases it, but it's not as much because you're kicking the can down the road a little further. So it's more gradual on just the five-year step up. So does that make sense? We kind of think it's...
This is a really good chart. Yeah.
Thank you.
It's a really good chart.
Well, yeah. People just don't love the percentages, but I think this is best.
I think it captures really what it needs to capture. Yeah.
Thank you. Okay. So that's that one. Now, this one, this chart is... this is comparing the contributions by year in dollars compared to the traditional. So when the traditional contribution is the zero line, and then if it's the bars are below the line, that's where they're delaying or you're getting less contributions than you would under the full ADC. And then when the contributions are above that, you're getting more than you would under the traditional because of you've had to make up for the contributions. You're either not getting it in the front end or you have to step down so that's pushing it forward. So if you remember the chart here on 11, the green on the, or the blue on the bottom and the purple on the bottom, those numbers are very similar on the five-year period. But on this bar chart, they're very different. So the 5 year is kind of a, if you just look at the 5 year on the 2, you won't see the real difference. But here you can see the blue with the step down involved. You get significantly more contributions in the middle 20 years. than you do under the traditional method or under the other option. So I thought that was interesting. The options, again, I'm recommending are the traditional or the three-year step-up, which isn't in the pension system's best interest, but I've heard the budget issues of the city, and I've acknowledged that they didn't like the step-down. So there are options that are better for us, but I'm trying to be respectful. So that's what this chart shows. Okay, so there's a lot of work on this page. There are implementation issues that we've been discussing with the city, so I wanted to put them out here. So right now, the DPSP actuary calculates the ADP, and that and the way this will work is our actuary, so right now that's Siegel, on an annual basis, they'll calculate the ADC based on the assumptions determined by the qualified actuary and adopted by the board in accordance with Section 2.02 of our statute. So if you pull out our statute today, it requires that the board hire a qualified actuary. They adopt the assumptions that you all tell them to adopt based on their recommendations. So that's in our statute. It's our actuary that does that. In addition to that, Article 16, Section 67F3 of the Texas Constitution requires that the board adopt sound actuarial assumptions that are used by the system. The city has proposed that the city and the board agree on the assumptions. And that's not in the Constitution, it's not in our statute. So again, this, I say in the second bullet, city contributions will be based on the ADC that our actuary calculates. They've also proposed that their actuary calculates an ADC and our actuary calculates an ADC, and if there's a 2% difference, we'll average them and use that number. I don't want to do that because we saw in 2016 our numbers are going to be very different than our numbers. So I would recommend against that. Okay, just to say that the date, because the dates are actually very confusing because their fiscal year is different than ours. So we will get an actuary evaluation hopefully before the end of the year, and then they'll build that into their budget and start paying in the October 1 of that thing that next year. That's how the timing will work. The city has agreed for the period 10-1-23 to 10-1-24, they will pay us their budgeted dollars in their accounts 1302 and 1320, which total $184,733.95. We've agreed to that. That's now our starting number for everything, which was higher than we had before. That helped some of the things. So again, just putting it out there. All right. So any questions on the ABC? I know that's a lot. All right, the next recommendation is much easier that the city had, or that Chiron had, and that was to decrease the employee contribution as the funding level of the plan improved. I'm recommending that we don't do that at this time. But I am clarifying that we would maintain the section in our statute, section 4.025, that requires that when there is no unfunded liability, the normal cost gets split 50-50. That's already in the plan. I want to make sure it stays in the plan. And I wanted to point out, too, that I'm not opposed to lowering the contributions for the members. And the city council can do that at any time if it becomes an issue for them or they decide that what they want to do is a policy decision. As long as they're paying the full ABC, I support the city lowering them. But for my recommendation right now, I would... I'm recommending we don't do this right now.
I think we felt like we had our number one priority was the ABC. Then next is what Kelly's going to talk about relative to the COLA. And then it's still something we'd love to do, but in terms of just having correct priorities, we made the decreased contribution the last. So it was not, this was just a question of prioritization. Take all three. We'd love to implement all three recommendations.
Yep.
So we have a clear one because that speaks to the core solvency.
extended period of time, which is both important, we think, in recruiting as well as in just, you know, delivering on promises. And then this was, we thought, an important one, but a distant third.
And it essentially doesn't need a plan change to do it if the city wants to lower it. It's something they can do easily without having to go to the legislature and stuff like that. Okay, the next item is the COLA. It's also complicated, luckily not as complicated as the ABC, but I wanted to start with just reminding you of what the current COLA is in our statute. So the requirements to receive a COLA is the average five-year investment return needs to be above 5%, so it's rolling five-year average. The plan has to be 70% funded after you grant the COLA. The member has to be either age 62 or has been retired for at least 3 years, and the board must approve the COLA. So those are the requirements. The calculation of the current COLA is it's the average five-year return minus 5%, and that's capped at 4%. The percentage is multiplied by the base benefit only, so it's not their whole benefit, it's only their base benefit. They don't get a COLA based on COLA, so their benefit supplement is just that. And it's, you know, not compounding, so it's a simple COLA. The way that Chiron has modeled the COLA is they have modeled it at 1.5%, and that's because throughout their model, they assumed we were going to make our assumed rate of return 6.5, so 6.5 minus 5. So it's a 1.5% COLA at this model. And because the AEC is in place, we will be at 70% funded sooner instead of 2073 that was in the actual valuation last year. Will be estimated to be there in 2046. But Chiron's recommending, as you know, we need to provide some COLA earlier. So, there's been lots of COLA conversations. Right now, there's been 9 COLAs that have been evaluated by Chiron, and the city has a new COLA that I learned about Tuesday night and just read about late last night. So, that's not on here. But let's talk about COLAs that we know about. So you had seen the first 6 COLAs that are on the top of this chart. The immediate partial COLA, the current and 70% purchasing power, current and 80% purchasing power, the immediate and the 80% purchasing power, the compound current immediate and 80% COLA, and then the Dallas ERF COLA. I have a little asterisk by some of those. And the one, and that signifies those COLAs that provide money now, like sooner or not, before 2046. If it doesn't have an asterisk, it doesn't provide anything until you get to 70% funded. So that's what that means. Since you have last seen the COLAs, we've modeled additional COLAs. So the first one on here is one that the city asked for. And it was that there's no COLA until we're 50% funded. And then once we're between 50 and 70% funded, it works like the immediate partial COLA, where you take the funding percentage times the COLA, and that's what you get. And after 70%, instead of doing that percentage deal, it's 100% funded. But the problem with that COLA is you don't get there. I think you get to 50% in 2041 versus 2046. So it doesn't make much change. The second new COLA on here is one where Josh and I talked to Chiron, and we said, we want you to be creative, come up with another idea for us that could be affordable, but provide some more money sooner. And they came up with this COLA that I have some slides to explain, and we're calling it the supplemental payment until you get to 70%, and then you revert back to the existing COLA. And I'll talk about that in a second. And then in Chiron's work, they actually kind of took the city's idea of their new COLA and amended their immediate partial COLA. So now, and I've got more slides on that. So the immediate partial COLA, instead of, say, let's say you're now 86% funded, you wouldn't, and you're above 70 and you're 86, So instead of doing 86% of 1.5%, you would go to 100% once you hit the revenue. So you get the full 1.5% at that point. That's what their total COLA is. The new COLA that the city is recommending gives, my understanding, again, I had a conversation with the CFO Tuesday night. He explained it to me. When he first talked about it, I thought it would encourage people to retire, so I recommended a change, which noted in there. It basically gives, a one-time COLA, but then it makes these other COLAs based on the return of the plan. So I think it gives a little bit, takes away more, but I need to understand more of it. Chiron has not come up with that COLA out. Their costs are based on Deloitte's analysis. So I can't talk much about that COLA. Okay, here's a bunch of information, already put aside, on the COLAs. I have two slides. This one is one that follows this. Kind of puts these in perspective, I hope. So we've got, this first slide will compare the actuarial liability and the normal cost of each of the COLAs. And then the next one will talk about the ABC for each of the COLAs. So you can kind of see how much does this COLA really cost. So the top two lines of the chart here, the very top line, the 2023 actuarial liability without the COLA, that is, without the ABC change, I'm sorry. That's what's in the valuation. It's, you know, roughly $5.2 million is what our total actuarial liability is. Once we put in the ABC and do nothing at all with the COLA, because we're now funded sooner, get 70% sooner, the COLA kicks in sooner, that alone adds $94 million to the actuarial liability. So the actuarial liability is going up to $5.3 billion with no change to the COLA at all. So that's kind of a base thing to kind of keep in mind when you're looking at these other increases. The first three COLAs that I have there with a little bracket next to, those are all versions of that immediate partial COLA. And again, what that is you just take the funding percentage of the plan and they're multiplying it times 1.5%. Or whatever your average five-year return is, and that's the COLA that you get. And the differences are really the city's idea of nothing till you're 50%, and then Chiron's new idea, which is the third one, of the percentage only applies to get 70% and it's 100%. So you can see there's the city's idea is roughly, well, less than half of the one that was originally offered. By the city, because you're doing no COLA at all for 50%, where the other one will start now, so somebody will get 34% of 1.5% is what they would receive in that version. And then you can see the cost of the other one. So the cost, by cost I mean the increase in the actuarial liability. So these are in order from the based on the increase in the actuarial liability. So the immediate partials you can see are $53 million increase, the next one is $129 to $137, and that just is because those are slightly different. The current and 70% purchasing power COLA is $142 million more, and the supplemental payment is $165. The current and 80 is $341, which I think is expensive. And then the other two COLAs that were offered in those presentations, Chiron just stopped costing them because they were just so far out of the ballpark. I don't even have updates.
Like over a billion?
Well, I do know that.
Wasn't it?
The ERS was
490.
The ARS, the ERS COLA is a $90 million increase in 20. I mean, that's actually to the contribution. Oh, to the, yeah, $840 million increase to the UAL for the ERS COLA. And the other one was a $776 million. Big numbers. So I should have explained more the supplemental payment COLA. We haven't talked about that one at all, so I have a couple slides on that before I go on to this other one. So, because Because that one's kind of the idea that when we said Chiron, try to be creative here, what can you come up with? So the key features on this new COLA concept is it's a supplemental payment. And sometimes you've heard of people talking about like a 13 check. So it's a one-time lump sum payment that would be done annually, but it doesn't build into your base. So you get it, and then you'll get another one next year, another one next year. It's not cumulative. The payment is scaled to the amount of service credit under the system. So similar retirees will get kind of a similar percentage COLA. You've got somebody that worked for 25 years. They both kind of promoted around the same time, so their salaries are always about the same. Their benefits are about the same. They're going to get roughly the same-ish COLA. Current retirees that have been retired for some time will get an immediate noticeable benefit. And then a beneficiary would get their portion of that COLA. So if you were a 50% beneficiary, you get 50%. If you were a 100%, you get 100% or special provider. So that they would follow that. So the way this would work is it's again like a 13th check. It would happen every year until you trigger the 70% funded level, and that's when the current COLA would come into play. And the way this is structured right now is it would be $5 per year of service times the number of years you've been retired. So I have an example here where a member worked retired with 25 years of service 10 years ago. So their supplemental payment would be 5 times 25 years of service times 10. So they would get a check for $1,250. And the nice thing about this COLA concept is it does, even though it's not cumulative, it does increase because the following year they would have been retired for 11 years, so their payment would go up to $1,375. So that's kind of the nice feature about that. The Chiron ran these numbers assuming with the data that they have, which was service up until they joined drop, if they were in drop, or they retired. So if somebody stayed in drop a long time, their service in drop is not counted in these numbers at this time. So that might need to be an adjustment down the road. And then it's all of their years retired. Some of the years they weren't receiving a COLA, but the way this is calculated today is service prior to drop or leaving active service and all their years retired. Questions on that COLA? The nice thing about it is it kicks in now. It's a little bit of money. In these examples, that $1,250 is about 40% of the average of somebody's COLA that they would have gotten. 4%? I can't remember. It's not equal to their an annual COLA, basically, but it makes a difference. Okay.
The last time the COLA was paid was 2017.
2016.
But prior to that, had there been a COLA?
Yeah, so there had been a 4% COLA. It wasn't tied to inflation. It wasn't tied to how the fund did nothing. It was just a flat 4% automatic COLA if you were hired before 2016?
Yeah.
2007.
2007.
Yeah. 2007. And then it was an ad hoc poll after that.
Is it tethered to a deferral of performance?
No. And the reason for that is we wanted to make sure that people were getting something. And otherwise, you know, it might just be a COLA on paper.
Fund was doing well, that's what I'm saying. If it wasn't doing well, they would go get something.
The way this is modeled, yes, because Chiron modeled it as if we were making our first time. So all of the COLAs that are presented here are
we have to make our returns in order for them to look for this to be considered.
No, these COLAs here are not tied to the return of the fund until you get to the 70%. Yes, they've been, yeah, as they're designed. Okay, the next page on the COLA talks about, so the first page was, what does it do to the liability? Oh, I didn't, I'm sorry, let me go back. So you can see in that second to the last column there, the increase in the actuarial liability. The last column shows you what's the increase to the normal cost. So as you know, COLAs, if they're given, are going to be given to people that are retired, but as you're working in your working years, they should be calculating that in to say when you retire, part of that cost of your benefit is going to be these COLAs, so the normal cost is going up. So 20.3 is the normal cost without any of these changes to the COLA. So as you can see that the amounts go up between, it's basically from 20.4, so just slightly under the one COLA, to 21.2 is what it does to the normal cost. And it's interesting if you look at the differences between the changes in the normal cost versus the change or changes in the increased actuarial liability, and that can kind of tell you where the most of the cost of the COLA is going. So, for example, the supplemental payment is $165 million of liability, but only a minor increase to the normal cost. So that's telling you most of that's going to retirees. Okay, so the next page, same COLA situation. Here we're talking about the ADC. So what we have to pay every year. The column in the middle, the first gray column there, is what does this do to the total ADC percentage? So that's 50% or 51-52% that they're paying every year. These COLAs, if you ignore the first one, which I think is too low, and the last one, which is probably too high, basically increase that 50%, depending on the model you're looking at, to roughly 2%. These are the, I took the average of all the years, because I didn't want to show you all those percentages, and these are the averages of the year. So you should know that in every scenario, all these COLAs start a little higher and go a little lower, but they hover around that average really low. That's how that works. Any questions on that piece? So basically, the way to think about it is most of these COLAs are about a 2% cost, other than the first one, which is a 1%, and this last one, which is a close to 5% cost. So in dollars, the ADC in 2025, this is the impact. So this is just 2025 because obviously payroll goes up, so these numbers will change. But if, under the traditional model, the cost for the middle four, I guess, four COLAs is $11 or $12 million under the traditional model. For those four COLAs under the three-year step-up in 2025, since you're not paying the full boat, it's about $4 million, and then $3 million under the five-year step-up, step-down. Questions on this COLA option? So I think the takeaway from this, in my mind, is a lot of these COLAs talk about the same, so we should think about how do we want them structured. What is most meaningful if that amount of money is available? Do we like the supplemental payment? Is it structured correctly? Should those right service years to use? Can we combine them somehow? So there can be some work here, massaging these, because none of them are perfect. The ones I'm recommending at this point are on this slide, bottom of this slide. And so I think any of these, the supplemental payment and the current COLA, is a good COLA that helps people now. The current and the 70% purchasing power, I think, is a great COLA for the future people, for future retirees. And the immediate partial and the current COLA also helps people now and is a good COLA. So all of those have features that I think are good in a variety of ways. I did want to point out, and Nick has said this before, and we've talked about this. The long-term health of the fund is the core most, you know, top priorities, which you told us in the last two meetings, and I totally agree with that. You also said that you agree with Tyra on that having an adequate COLA is also important for the members, both active and retired, and that you said that modifying COLA is important and second only to long-term health care funds. That's what I heard at the last meeting. And I do feel strongly that any COLA that's contemplated in the future needs to be paid for, needs to be factored in. I mean, we already have this huge unfunded liability that should have been paid for by the taxpayers in the past, right? That's now kind of being lumped on the taxpayers in the future, and we don't want to do that with the COLA for the future. I mean, the people that are working this year, if that's going to be part of their benefit, that they should be paid for that this year. Questions on this? Okay. Now, now I want to switch your mind a little bit for a concept that we have not talked about before. And this came up because I was in talking with the city about the COLA and thinking about the way we have these structured, almost all of them, if not all of them, all the COLAs are structured with something now and then it reverts to the current COLA. And in the conversations with the city, where they talked about wanting to have a veto of the COLA, even if all the provisions are met, and maybe not factoring the, you know, Deloitte saying they didn't need to factor it in, I went back and I reread the COLA provisions. So I started thinking about, should we be looking at modifying the current COLA to something that's better but doesn't cost more in the plan? And so that's what this is. Nothing Chiron recommended. Nothing we've talked about before, but it came about from the conversations that I've had. So one of the recommendations I have is we should change it to a shall grant, a COLA, versus a may grant, to take those conversations of do I need to cost it in, or do we have a veto just off the table, and so the members know it'll be there when it's there. It doesn't come in until the plan's 70% funded anyway. So, you know, you've made your investment returns at some point. You know, you might have a bad year and you're given a COLA. But it would be, so I would say automatic versus ad hoc. I'd also set the COLA at 1.5%. So that actually eliminates the member's upside, but it also eliminates their downside. By setting at 1.5%, I know that the Chiron's model will be fine because that's what they modeled it at. And because it's now automatic versus ad hoc, I thought those worked well together. Again, you only get it when you're 70%. So I would actually only grant the COLA when it's 70% funded, and the Dallas Employees Retirement Fund grants the COLA in any year. And the reason I've tied it to Dallas TRS is because they look at the CPI. So this COLA, if it's granted, if we're at 70%, and ERX is a COLA, this COLA would come into play, which would mean there's been inflation because their COLA is tied to the CPI. And to me, that's what a COLA should be. So that's what I did there. Again, the opportunity to earn more or less 1%, 1.5% is eliminated. I've removed the requirement that the member must either be 62 or 3 years retired. That was the model in Chiron. So I know that's something we haven't talked about at all. You might have questions or concerns on any of that.
I think we just wanted to kind of sink in, and then you know, we're not contemplating any motions or anything like that today, but just to ponder this relative to all the other contemplated changes and negotiations we have going on. So
this is on top of the supplement.
This would be, so right now, where the way all these work is it once you hit 70%, the current COLA
mm-hmm.
kicks in?
Yes.
This would amend what's in the current COLA.
1.5%
yeah.
COLA,
30%. Okay. Yeah, and it's automatic, but only when there's inflation, because, you know, or when ERS rate. It's half of the ERS COLA for those lowest levels.
But it keeps the supplemental.
Yes. If that's the one you pick, it would keep the supplemental or it would keep the immediate partial, if that's the thing that would have been with that. Yeah. So something that is creative. I give you that much. Right on that. Okay, so let's see what else I have here.
We're talking about the process a little bit.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying.
Kelly, I got a question, I'm sorry. This is backing up a little bit, it's not about COLA, but you didn't ask the questions when you were talking about the employee contribution amount. And looking at the Chiron recommendations, one of their recommendations is that the employee contribution amount drop.
Right.
So we're going to deviate at this point from their recommendation to the basis, correct? I want a little more clarity on that.
So, yeah, I mean, and I think Nick did a great job of explaining this. I think it's, we all think it's important. We think the employee contributions are high. They are high, and they're painful, and I totally recognize that. The reason that I'm recommending that be the third level priority, if they have all the money in the world, I would definitely put that in there. I'm not opposed to it, but when I'm having to, you know, pick from the menu, I would put that one last. And the reason for that is, number one, I think if the city decides they have a problem with hiring, they'll adjust this on their own. But the bigger reason is this decrease didn't start happening until way down the road. It was like 2041. So it's money we would build in now, and nobody's COLA would decrease until, 2041. It's not going to change the contribution or the employee rate for so long. I didn't think that was any bang for the buck. I thought that we would be better off putting the money in a different place. That was the reason.
Okay.
If we could do the employee contribution reduction now, that would
I understand the city council and the city can always agree to lower a rate, but I think I don't believe that's going to happen. Why would the city make those changes? I think this is the only opportunity we have to. You're right, it's down the road, not tomorrow, but the only opportunity we have to give a definitive date for active employees will get some relief. So
I think if that's where you want to go.
I'm just making sure that I want to bring it to the board's attention. I think believing the city is going to unilaterally lower the contribution rate, I don't think that's going to happen. Anyway.
Yeah, well said.
Are there any other questions before I kind of do the little last slide? And I think Josh has something to say. And I didn't mean that. I mean, you can always interrupt me. I talk on and on. So feel free. Over the next few months, we plan to obviously continue to work with the city. We do want to come to a plan that we can all agree on. So we'll definitely continue to work with them to find agreement on the funding plan as well as the governance issues that they have. There is a slide in the presentation that I believe they were posting this morning. I think it's one of the last slides in there. They're talking about governance. And it again goes back to control over the assumptions, control over the APC, control over the COLAs, those types of things. We have to work through some of that.
Do they have those current controls on the other pensions?
I don't know. I don't believe they do. But I don't know.
Well, I don't think there's an ABC.
Yeah, there is.
Oh, there is.
Mm-hmm. So those are just some things we still have to work through. And we have worked through some things, I have to say. Jack and I, we had 20 items. We're working through them. We're both trying. So we'll continue these discussions with the board, and if there's any other analysis that you want to see, Matt, if you want us to look more into the employee contribution amount, what it would cost if we try to do something sooner, I'm happy to have time run those. And then the board will adopt a plan before we're required to do so. So that's kind of the plan going forward. I anticipate this would be happening in May and June timeframe. So.
Yeah, so the board could well adopt a plan in May or June. Remember, you don't have to adopt a plan until November, and so we'll try to get it done earlier, and hopefully we will. The one thing I want to point out to you, if you have been watching the or attending in person the ad hoc committee meetings, you know that the city has been working towards fixing both pensions sort of simultaneously. I think at some point there was discussions about fixing the ERF pension before the police and fire pension, and I'm not quite sure exactly what the city
management's mindset is on that process. But interestingly, about 2 weeks ago, there was a Supreme Court decision that kind of threw a monkey wrench into that process. So there's been litigation going on for several years between the City of Dallas and the ERF Fund, where the City of Dallas put in term limits for the trustees on the ERF board, and the fund sued the city to void those term limits, arguing that the ERF board hadn't approved them. So that litigation kind of went back and forth, and it went to the Texas Supreme Court. And interestingly, the Texas Supreme Court, in a decision a couple of weeks ago, not only sided with the city, but they actually went further than I think either party realized. And what the Supreme Court held is that, in effect, they said that the ERF board no longer has the ability to approve or veto any plan changes to the ERF plan, which they had historically always done. So now it is up to the city council, and it may still be up to the voters to approve those changes, it may not be. The Supreme Court remanded back to the appeals court to decide whether or not the City of Dallas voters need to approve any changes to the ERF plan. But in my opinion, the Supreme Court kind of sounds a little doubtful that the voters should have the right under Texas constitutional law. So really, if the city council is inclined to adjust the benefits and contributions in the ERF plan in some form or fashion to make it more sound, then they've got some waiting to do until the court decides it. So I don't know if that's going to have an effect on our process. It may or not, but I thought it was important for the board to know that this event happened. And so the city, it seems to me like, and I don't know what the city attorney is telling the council, but it seems to me like the city is going to be on hold a little bit with respect to if they do anything to the benefits or contributions on the ERF plan side of the world. So just wanted to let you know that.
So Josh, when we do actually adopt a plan, it's an 8-person vote, not a 6, right?
It's a straight majority vote.
It is
for our plan.
All right. Yeah. So hopefully this has been good from an education standpoint. Hopefully it's been directional in terms of where you see where this is heading. It's an interactive process with, you know, Kelly and Josh talking to the city. I've been involved at different points. The mayor pro tem has been great at communicating, although he has 3 numbers, so I get called by 1 of the 3. I never know which one is him or what he calls me. But we want to give everyone a chance to be heard, and ultimately you're, you know, accountable to your role as a trustee. So we just need a lot of feedback, a lot of communication along the way, you know, recognizing that we're inching forward. And if someone feels like they have a viewpoint that is an outlier to kind of how we're moving this, you know, speak up sooner rather than later. Let's address it. Let's talk through things. And we'll do our absolute best not to try to get it ahead of us, you know, in those discussions, but it is a dynamic process, and there's obviously, you know, what the city thinks and how they communicate and all that is, you know, an incredibly important part of this. And then we ultimately have our decisions made, and we have to comply with the statute and do it by November. So does everyone feel good about, we're not talking about every single provision, but in terms of the directional that this is moving, the priorities that we discussed, anyone want to make any comments or have thoughts that they think is, they want to speak up?
I just want clarity. I want to make sure that I'm clear on this. So the city can pick and choose the recommendations that we present to them. In other words, they can say, well, this council is this doesn't.
The city's going to do their own thing?
Yes. So
that regardless of what we get here.
Right. So what we're hoping is that we will do something that our board likes and what the city council likes, and they're the same thing. That is what we're working really hard to try to achieve. If we can't get there, our board has a legal requirement to adopt something. And the city can do something with that or not do something with that, but that becomes, we believe that becomes the law until the legislature changes it at that point. The city has a different legal opinion on that, but it doesn't change your obligation.
No, I wanted clarity on the on the feasible outcome. In other words, we will all do our petition responsibility, but can recommend that. I guess I just want to process it. At the end of the day, the city decides what they're going to do. They're going to want to do in regards to their responsibility.
Right.
I think that if there's, let's define that as an impasse where we adopt a plan and they adopt a plan or vote some or let us know that they're not going to implement it, then my understanding is that it kicks to the legislature in some form or?
Yeah, it, well, like Kelly said, I mean, our view is different, and we have a different legal view than the city does, but real world, what will happen is if we don't have the same plan as the city, then the likelihood is incredibly high that we're down in front of the legislature trying to get a legislative change to the plan that, you know, ultimately becomes the law. So, you know, the legislature is the law. That's the likely outcome if we don't match the city.
Thank you.
Kelly, the board has actively, or not the board, sorry, you have actively been trying to get with the city to find a solution for a very long time. And the argument is being made now by the, from the city that it would be an undue burden to immediately put any of these changes into effect. So that's why we should have one of these other options. But it's not because we haven't been trying to reach a solution for a very long time, correct? So the reason that the city is facing these budget shortfalls is because we're waiting for the 11th hour to get a solution, correct?
Well, so we tried in 2017 to get adequate funding in the plan. And at the time, we could only get to 44 years of funds, which was unheard of that the legislature would even pass such a plan. And that's why this provision came into play. The whole Section 2.825 came out of that. We cut everything possible out of the members' benefits, as you well know, and increased the contributions of the members. But we couldn't close the gap. So this whole section came into play. And we had a floor and the contributions, and the cities, although they have the information every year, they've had our valuation and they have their actuary, they knew this day was coming. They were part of the process when we adopted this process in 2024. They knew it was coming. They knew the numbers were going up. I can't tell you that I had been working with city. I had had conversations with them. And they're like, we're following the statute until 2024. We're not getting it. That's it. No more nickels, just that. And that was at the staff level. That was the CFO. So we didn't really start working on trying to get this hashed out until the independent actuary process. So I don't want to say I've been working with them, but we've sent them letters. The whole year under more than 2% of them to ABC letters. We've given them the valuation. They knew this day was coming.
It said there have been three CFOs, right?
I was going to say, let's make clear that. I think
that's
the prior CFO.
Sorry. It wasn't.
And also, let's remember that, you know, we had our own act to get together. You know, that if you look at our results historically, people would say there was not continued confidence here.
Yeah.
And that over the last 7 years, you know, we've had a lot of communication on this point where there, you know, the sense of what I've heard is we give you all this money, you know, how do we feel comfortable you'll be good stewards of it? And so, and when we see that a lot of the big numbers are moving in the wrong direction year after year, and we've had to show, and really through your all collective good work, that we now are, we believe, good stewards, that we have a team put together, we have confidence at every level, and that we've had a lot of discussions around our ability to take this increased funding and achieve the goals that, that everybody wants. And so, you know, there's been a little bit of sort of show me, and I think that's a fair perspective on their part. And I've spent a lot of time with various members just discussing that point, really explaining a lot of the byproducts of things that you all put in place, what staff has done in terms of really reconstituting the portfolio from something, you know, that 7 years ago was two-thirds illiquid with a lot of struggling assets, and that to something now where two-thirds is what most pension funds should look like, a traditional allocation. We're still dealing with some of these other assets and working through it, and that over the last 7 years, we've funded over 100% of our negative cash flow through monetizing the illiquid assets. From a governance standpoint, you know, people sit in, you can't, based upon the way we vote and interact, you can't tell who is the mayoral appointee versus other appointees. The first year you certainly could. You sat in those meetings. I remember that. So we had a lot of work we had to do. So on that point, I guess they knew it. But, you know, if 7 years ago was the year we had to adopt a plan, it would have for sure been kicked to the state. I mean, it just had to work the process. And we're down, you know, we're closer to the end than we are the beginning, but we had to get our act together.
And the other thing, too, is I don't want it to sound like I think the city was just sitting around doing nothing. They have, as you know, they have so many priorities. Plus, they had to deal with the pandemic in the middle of all this. I mean,
yeah.
It's been a tough time.
I'm not trying to say that the city, okay. Well, more so, I was just the budget shortness, because the budget process takes a year. Well,
right.
Very long time process. I'm just saying, I said step it up, step it down options. I think everybody knew that this cost was going to exist. That's all.
Okay.
So, kind of like the good thing is our fiduciary duty is pretty clear,
yeah.
And we can only do what we can do, which I think what the chairman said, I think we've done what we're supposed to do to be good stewards of funds, and also we're making a good faith effort,
yeah,
to push forth the plan that is respectful of the city. And there's continuing dialogue that's going on. So, quite honestly, I'm not quite certain what more as a board we can be doing other than where we are. Our goal is very limited, and I think we're doing what we're supposed to be doing. And more importantly, we're engaging with the city. The city sees, I think, what's going on here. So, I'll continue to be optimistic until I'm not.
My only comment, and maybe I don't know, and maybe I'm going to misspeak, but to your point, I think progress has been made, and I think it's been proven in the numbers, right? Our performance is there. We've been good stewards of what we've had control over, and we, I think, have gone in the right direction with controls, with governance, and policy, and structure on how to invest. As far as the state goes with the city, I mean, it is to the point that you're negotiating about controls on assumption rates, it's kind of disheartening sometimes when you hear that, because they want to take control of things that we have done well, in my opinion. The second part, and this is the part that I don't really understand, and I don't know the details of it, so I might misspeak. But I believe a bond is going before the city of Dallas to vote for, and of that money, what is thought, not on infrastructure, but of the future of our both, you know, first responders and civilians, to fortify their future, to protect the park, to protect this, and to protect the road. Was that consideration, and what kind of good faith is that in on the precipice of us asking all this money? And it not being included in that, because I do not believe it's being included in that. So that is my issue, even though it has, I believe that, and I'm just, it's an opining of the good faith process with the city, but we are constantly battling this idea that we don't do a good job.
or the past goals of the previous board. I believe we are in the best shape. I believe members have confidence in us. I believe we have a good relationship with the board. I believe we've done all that we need to do as the PRB has asked us, independent, and you should feel all confident that we, with continued negotiations, have done as much as we can to come to a really good talking point. I'm not being antagonistic, and I'm just simply saying that we should be proud of how we go and the next couple of decisions, IEMA, we were there. We're right there. And we are being good stewards of the money, and we are going to be good fiduciaries to the members. So I just kind of, I'll get off on my soapbox, but I just want to kind of put it out there as far as good faith goes.
We really want to come to common ground with the city and avoid the contingent process. And everything you're talking about, it comes to bear. I don't feel, and once again, we come to this differently, of how the city should communicate to its stakeholders about this. So that's their job, and you know, our job is to do our job. And you know, we've not actively sought any sort of PR angle on this. You know, we met with Chief Garcia, you know, a few weeks ago, and we brought him up to speed. He was very positive in kind of what he's hearing. In fact, I don't know if you would agree with that. You know, on the flyer side, you know, some feedback as well. But you know, our job is to do our job, and the city's job is to do theirs. And I really don't, but my instincts, and I think Kelly and Josh feel the same way, is not to go beyond that, but recognize there is some interplay and so on. So, and we can feel really good about things when we have something that we voted on and the city's ratified, and that's really the goal, and that's and we're, like I said, we're in the right direction.
The one thing I'd add to that is, since the beginning, I think both Kelly and I kind of said, with, you know, sort of you talk about the bond money and so on, it's like we've always said, it's, you know, funding the funding, and how the city chooses to get the money, that's, you know, that's a big job, and that's a big thing. That we would totally leave it to the people here and their colleagues, you know, to figure that process out. That's not really.
I agree. I'm making a point about it, though, because I do believe our members have been paying 13.5% and the majority of that. And if I don't, you know, and but at the same time, as spending goes for the city and being smart about that and having, like, thought, if this bond goes before and it kind of could help this, in a very small way, because we're talking about, you know, we're very close, I believe. We're very close. But it just seems hard to articulate that we're just, what's going to take us to part is very small. That could be solved in the fundraising part of it. The financing of it, whatever.
I think your priorities are
correct.
I think we're way closer now. I'm remaining optimistic. I think we're way closer than we are far apart. And I told officers this, and I believe it's that as far as the priorities go, that's a certain priority of changing the rate of contribution. I don't think we should. And I told officers, I know a lot of them are disagreeing with me. I told police officers, man, this, but I was here when this problem was created, and so I was part of the problem. And so we're asking the city to, and however they fund it, we're asking the city to pay in BDC and to increase your contribution. And I think it's a little disingenuous. I was part of the problem, so I should continue to be part of the solution and pay, as an officer, I should pay the same rate. And we should pay the same rate until the city decides at a later time that they want us to lower that rate, which they might do to recruit. And I know that's a big yes, but you're still looking at 16, 20 years down the road until that would be an impact anyway. So that's why I just stick with, I was part of the problem, I should continue to be part of the solution along with the city. got this together, and we're going to get out of this together. And I, and like I said, I think we're much closer to resolving this and however they want to fund it, that's the city's business, than we are for other parts. So I remain up to the city.
But I just, I mean, and the other thing too is that he's, by the way, fantastic job on the on explaining. I think a lot of the graphs have really, really honed in on some of the issues. And one of the ones I liked was this one, okay? Because it really, this is budgeting right here for the city. You see what I'm saying? This is budgeting. If you want some continuity in budgeting as the city goes and how they think about forward going, you want as smooth as line, as smooth as graph as possible, or bar chart across. That 5 years is that what is that color? Turquoise line?
Yeah.
That is the worst kind of budgeting I've ever seen, because you, that is the drop, that is, you want a smooth line.
Yep.
So to you know, when I think about what they're asking, what we're asking, I think we do think about the needs of the city, and I personally do as well. But that is a choice. That's based on that chart in itself.
Well, it's also like your mortgage. If you, you know, the longer you push it out, the more it's going to cost you. So for the taxpayers, overall, the traditional cost less.
Right.
Then the, you know, right. The contributions.
But that's on the table. We respect that, and we've heard that, and we've considered that as far as the negotiation goes with the city. And I'm okay with that. But like, if we're really looking at a 3 year step up or 5 year step up, that's dramatic. I mean, you could just show it right here. And that's a budgeting issue, in my opinion, for the city.
What other comments? Does everyone feel good about the process? Kind of feel like you understand it?
Yeah.
Feel like you understand the core components of the ABC, the COLA? Once again, I really tip my hat to Chiron. You know, on the COLA in particular, they had some charts about just the degradation of purchasing power over years that I think really was eye-opener. I mean, and once again, I tip my hat to them because they took the process beyond the spreadsheet, which is great to see.
I did like the kind of, I think, I like the way we're moving.
Yeah.
There seems to be a consensus with some normal movement on the edges. But I think this shows the seriousness of what we're doing. And I actually like the slides where it shows the current position of the city. That really makes you have an idea of where we are. Honestly, I was a little bit favorably impressed that I didn't see as much of a divergence.
I agree.
It's definitely a divergence, but
agree.
I thought it would be a little larger than it was. So.
Well, and that's the point I was making before. I feel like we're so close
so,
in the negotiating process.
I think we're doing our job, and hopefully people realize that we are trying to do the best we can and be respectful of all the stakeholders.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So everyone good? Kind of move on.
One more point. There was a lot of newness brought into ideas on the COLA. Where are we going to go forward? I mean, like, you just brought up one that was not even in my purview. But how should we move forward thinking about that? Because I think that they were really kind of ingenuous. I mean, like, ingenious in some ways, but maybe some tweaking.
Right. So
and has the city seen that? Those proposals?
Uh-huh. Oh. Yeah, I have all that information. They have everything I have.
The newest one
yeah,
as well?
Yeah, they have that.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, we'll just continue our dialogue and then report back. So.
Okay.
And if you have ideas on, because there's a million ways to structure this COLA, and if you have ideas on what you think is more important, more money sooner, surety of the money, more money later. I kind of look at it as if we can keep the COLA around a 2% increase, maybe we can play with the structure to where it accomplishes the goal and gets some, you know, it really is a cost of living increase and helps maintain at some level their purchasing power.
Kelly, you mentioned wealth. More money sooner is lump sum payments in addition to the top of the table at this point.
that run just?
Well, the lump sum that they did was that supplemental payment, so that it would be that. Like a whole 13th check, you might have heard that. There was just,
No, I meant broader lump sum payments into the fund.
Oh, well, that's not off the table. So what would happen if, and we've had actually both the city CFO and I have called the Chiron and say, if the city did do a lump sum, how does that work? Because, and so what, it's really complicated with the step up layer.
But
basically, that will always be a possibility. So if next week, next year, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, if there is a lump sum of money that comes in from whatever source, if it's a bond, an asset sale, whatever source, it will go in and it will reduce the city's ADC over the long run. And there's nothing needs to be written in to make that happen. It's just a math, really.
Okay, let's move on. To item C2, Executive Director Ministerial Action.
Okay, so I have the next few items, and they will all be very short because I know you're tired of listening to me. So, the in April agenda, we have 26 refunds, 5 estate payments, 8 survivor benefits, 9 retirements, which is lower than the prior month and lower than last year's April, 1 divorce split of a pension benefit and 1 service purchase. So that was the activity for this last month. Any questions on that? That's not the end of the list.
Yeah, you can go on.
Okay, so your monthly contribution report, nothing unusual on this as well. The city has done some hiring, mostly on the fire side. There are 47 positions less than the estimate. Police is down 284, fires over by 237. For February, there were 2 pay periods, and the total contributions were $13 million from the city during that pay period. Nothing unusual, everything that was expected. The floor won't be a factor. By the way, what's never been shown on here is that this is just the city contributions based on payroll. We don't show the $13 million on here, but just so you know, in the city's budget in 2024, since our fiscal year, that's the only say part of that, because that $13 million ends 12/31/2024, the $13 million will go away. But that, we've known that. That's been the plan. So the next item is Board of Approval of Trustee Education and Travel. This is now includes a lot of the NCPR conferences that are coming up. At the NCPR conferences are actually usually very good. My favorite one that I always think is the best one in my mind is the Public Pension Funding Forum. If you're ever looking at a good conference, there's a lot of these. If you can't get enough ADC today, that's the place to go, let me tell you. So if you're interested in any of these conferences or anything else, let us know. We can add to the list to get approval. Anything on that? Okay. So we did have a lot of you attend Tech First at the this week, actually. On here, I have the ones that went through this approval process, and I know some of you attended on your own and with other employers, and you were there. So the way we do this is once somebody goes to a conference, then you can report out on while or anything else you want to show a group. So I have tagged Tina and Nancy on here, and then obviously Tom and Marcus and over there. Anybody else?
Yeah, I thought it was good. I mean, obviously, I went to the basic training kind of level that I've always been on the DC side, so that's kind of what I have to compare this to. And I always say, you know, if I can take 1 or 2 things away from the conference, I thought it was pretty informative. Some of the speakers were great. Some were, some of the presentations were outstanding. Some not so great, which I think is fantastic. Some seem like commercials.
Yeah.
You know, look how great I am, and you can use me. But overall, yeah, a positive. I think it was great to meet people from different, just kind of get an idea of how their pitch is working and how agents and how they view people on our board and how highly it kind of gives them more confidence on how highly they view different people on this board. So I definitely had a positive experience that came out of it. Looking forward to hopefully to have that one in August in San Antonio. I think I want to go to that one just because it was a good experience.
I really enjoyed it. This year, it was different than it was any year. They really tried to engage trustees and pensions. They didn't educate this year. COVID. They did this like sharp thing.
Sharp
thing,
yeah.
Yeah, they did the sharp thing where they actually, what they used to do in the hedge fund world is they would have managers pitch, and they did that as well. And instead of people voting on them, they picked the best. They had that sense of, for people to learn about very different disciplines, but in an engaging way. Another thing that they had someone come there every year, like the DB versus the DC, but he was really interesting, even though it's always a tired discussion, because he was talking about like how corporations are now going back to the DB part of it, because the expense of DC and these, so that was very interesting. He also talked about how important pensions are to narrowing the equity differential in a community, especially in, like with among African Americans, that pensions do so much to kind of at least help the narrowing in retirement, particularly. And he went and showed these very effective graphs that no one really did, like no one's ever discussed about what it does to the communities, to various communities. So that was very interesting. We had some macro guys that came in outright that their overall thinking was, we're still in a growth mode, okay? Look at the FOMC is not going to cut because, you know, the inflationary issues are there. You still have a tight labor force. Look at what's happening to oil. They have to pick up in permits, and even though they've gone down, they're still extremely elevated to pre-COVID times. So we're still, people are still paying, and we're still seeing that growth, and he doesn't think they are. And he says we are going into a second election year, and they certainly won't do anything then. That is his opinion. And so we won't. This is what he believes. This is the environment we are in, at least a year from, at least a year out. So that was interesting. The private credit space. While we have a lot of private credit managers out there, a couple of good nuggets there was. They said that it's really saturated, that it has probably seen the most exponential growth of every asset class, private credit space, and that to like buyer beware. And that if you're looking at direct, for the most part, you should go with the bigger firms because of the scale, and the small ones couldn't. And then there was the bond buyers don't get hero. That's what was basically said. And but there's opportunity there. There's a lot of opportunity there, and it speaks well to pension who are looking for liquidity and cash flows. And then there was a speaker from the Fed, a young woman who was apparently there for 3 months. She spoke very eloquently, and the most interesting part about that came up with the loans. And she said about who's doing the loans, the BlackRock, KKRs, and all these kind of interesting, and she said, talk about the banks. And she said that the banks aren't, that the covenants, that basically it's not that they choose not to, that they have a fund issue. And the fund issue, especially with the community and regional, have all been a part of the default and the lack of faith in deposits. And what they're seeing now is an uptick in the deposits and them coming in, and this all speaking to this idea of growth still. And certain deals that are being done, they're going back to their community or regional bank. Yeah, community. So that was also interesting but like I like leaned on a lot of little interesting things that people had to say. AI was one person talked about it and said that is going to be evolutionary as it regards to like the heavy analytical work that doesn't require a lot of things but it's more rote, and also talked about using AI and real estate as an urban development and using and they talked in various instances how the AI could really be transformative. And even within pensions, and using them because it's the nature of policy and rulemaking type of organizations, AI works really well with that. So there you go. Maybe that's too much, sorry.
Just two other quick points. One, and everything's been covered pretty much.
Yeah.
One is governance is an area that's going to get a lot more attention going forward. And then the PRB, I guess there's a number of things the legislature is working on that the PRB will be reviewing in terms of funding and so forth going down the road. So they outlined their deadlines for providing different reports, and that will be something to keep be aware of as we go forward.
Oh, and two other things to say with regard to that, that they're automating, so they want to see the plant, like they're trying to get plants like that, so they get, so that's what they're in the process of. And the second thing is, which I was kind of flabbergasted, and please tell me if I got these numbers wrong, they said that the 100 Texas plants, only 5 have submitted.
That's right.
That's all right?
Yes.
Oh, wow. I still love that.
I mean, people respect the PRP, and we, you know, I mean, they're the law. We follow the law. We have to do the reporting. We have to do the reporting. So people take that seriously.
Yes, they have.
I did want to add one thing that is good for the pension system. Ken Haven, who's still on our IAC, used to be on the board, obviously, was reelected as a trustee for on the board of TechFirst. So that's good. So if you ever need any technical information or if you have any comments,
yeah. Good. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, Ryan. Streamlined update.
All right, we'll do the best we can. First, I wanted to announce we made a new hire on the investment staff, Kyle Schmidt, as investment officer. So, I'll do a quick intro.
Yeah, I'll keep it brief in the interest of time. But I was previously at Various Investments in Seattle. I worked for our chief investment officer there on kind of a special project basis. Around a lot of different teams. Excited to hear that.
Well, excited to have Tom and the team. It runs out the whole team nice.
What are you getting right?
What?
I'm sorry, I missed that part.
He's an investment officer.
Special?
Yeah, we'll work him into some manager assignments and want to have a lot more work to do once we start making some new private investments down the road. All right, portfolio update. Through March, year-to-date return is 3.96 for the overall portfolio and up 6.1% from the public market, which is about three-quarters of the portfolio now. Liquidation of private market assets has been slow. We only have gotten $2.2 million through into March. We got another $4.5 million in the last week. That compares to $69 million last year, as we talked about. When we do these updates, it's going to be much lumpier going forward, but we have some hopeful visibility to a few decent-sized distributions that will be coming back in the next few months. On rebalancing, actually tomorrow, we're going to move $28 million from the public equity portfolio, and I'll outline kind of exactly where this comes from in a minute, back into the safe reserve to refill to that 9% target. On the custodian search, Cal's helping us out with that. We had a call open last week, reviewed a draft RFP. We expect to issue that on Monday. And that would be going out to our current custodian, JP Morgan, and four other groups. I'll let Tom cover some of the stuff on the IAC meeting and asset allocation. After this, we have Ron Pastor from AEW in to do a portfolio review today. But kind of next few quarters is asset allocation and then gearing up on the private market side. We had initial discussions with IAC 2 weeks ago. Like I said, I'll let Tom cover more of that discussion in a minute here, but basically we're going to come back to the IAC in June with a few more options to look at, which pushes out bringing asset allocation recommendations to the board till after the June IAC meeting. On equity market returns, so we've been in a growth mode and long-term returns are very good, but I think one thing that gets lost a little bit, even with the run-up the last 6 months, if you look at the ACWI IMI, which is our benchmark on public equity, I think line in the middle there, it's basically been flat or just slightly positive now for the last 2 years and a quarter. And then you can see the bottom there, EM trailing the rest of the global indices quite a bit. This is from Akita, just looking at basically valuation levels across various different asset classes. And the two that are kind of top decile right now are U.S. equity valuations and private equity. We've known that there are quite some good reasons that valuations are high, especially the U.S. market, but kind of given where valuations are, that kind of helped out with some of the rebalancing decisions that we made. Public market performance, a lot of green on the page. Long term, our public portfolio is up 7.3% over a 5-year period. On the global equity, just a few things to point out here. If you look down at WCM, which is the new growth manager, they're the only of our four active global managers that is benchmarked officially to the style benchmark. So everyone else is a core benchmark. We compare them to the growth in their style, and they're up quite a bit, 5%. I don't know if it's a benchmark here today. Obviously, early days there. After struggling last year, our small cap managers with Eastern Shore and Global Alpha have outperformed pretty well year to date for Q1. EM is about at benchmark, but overall the EM performance has not been there in EM equity. And then on fixed income, everyone's performing fairly well aside from Loomis on the high yield side. So any questions on public performance? Okay, ended the month with 1.997 billion in AUM. We checked mid-March and it was kind of keeping an eye on that 2 billion of AUM level. And before we made the benefit outflow payment at the end of March, we had crept above 2 billion for, I think, the first time since August of 22. So, good indicator there. This is the benefit outflow coverage chart. Obviously, there's been a ton year to date, but over the last 7+ years, we've covered 99% of outflows with private market distributions coming in. A lot of that coming from Ron's portfolio, which we'll get to in a minute. Safe reserve at the current levels, and this is pre-rebalancing, we had $156 million in cash and short-term bonds, which is enough to cover 18 months of benefit outflows through September of 2025. That will be extended out a few months now. To wrap back there, oh gosh, but I don't know, it's up to you. Well, yeah.
Much better.
Okay, so we're covered through well into 2025 on cash and short term. Safety reserve, this is the detail on asset allocation. So, on that 28 million of rebalancing that we did, the four active global managers, you can see them at the top of the page there, Boston Partners, Manulife, Walter Scott, and WCM. They were a little bit above the 6% target, so we drew all of those down to 119 million in value. So we kind of balanced out across four of those, and that led to 28 million in proceeds that are coming back into cash tomorrow. Any questions on the portfolio? Okay.
All right, Tom?
Sure. The Investment Advisory Committee, we had, in addition to the portfolio review that Ryan's covered, we had the asset allocation study with Makeda. And it included looking at initial allocation mixes and liquidity analysis and supporting rationale. The objective is to really review all this and, you know, bring this to the board sometime in the third quarter after additional mixes are reviewed. At the June IEC meeting, there was a lot of discussion as far as private credit and emerging market debt and combinations with public equity. Where they came down, and there's still more info that's needed, but after a lot of the discussion, that an allocation to private credit of 5% would be at the expense of natural resources, which is 2%, and some combination of public equity or emerging market debt. Because there was a lot of questions on emerging markets in general and emerging market debt, Makeda's going to provide the IEC with pros and cons of emerging markets and debt at the next meeting, and this will be looking over 5 and 10 year periods. So, still a work in progress, and no, it's good information.
Yeah, and Tom, just putting back to some other discussions before, that in our discussions with the city about confidence, the just sort of firepower of your group was something that we were really touting, and you know, as that all of a sudden there was this, you know, significant additional amount of money, that we really have a seasoned, experienced team that, you know, you're leading there that can give us and work with Ryan and then advise us to give great advice. So I can't emphasize enough that that's a, you know, it's a important part today, but it's something that we've really highlighted as a huge positive in terms of the go forward. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a tremendous team on the IEC.
Yeah.
There's a lot of firepower, a lot of experience as well as perspective in terms of long-term, what's happened, what's worked, and,
yeah,
you know, being able to change with the times.
I'd just like to make one comment. I do agree. It was a very lively discourse on asset allocation and where an allocation would go to private credit if we went that direction. And the issue of emerging market debt and equity was really predicated on what is our goal? Okay, what is the IRR investment policy goal? And is it risk mitigation? Is it a capital appreciation? What is that? And really consider that when we start to having to make those tough choices, since we're not getting those streams from legacy assets to cover distribution of benefits of where we're pulling. And my point was, if we have global managers who have the ability to allocate to emerging and they're not doing it, why are we doing it? Like, why are we considering that? And this whole idea of mean reversion. I mean, like, there is a certain level of common sense is that, like, if a fund that is less than 35% funded, should we be in emerging market, period? And that was just the question I posed.
Yeah. Just to throw on the other side, that's why we have diversification. Yeah, there will be different asset classes that perform extremely well in certain times and others not. But it's important to have a well-diversified portfolio. And that's something that wasn't brought on in the earlier discussion. We're assuming that we'll continue to be challenged, but, you know, I'm an optimist, and I'm very positive that our investment team is going to be able to generate competitive risk-adjusted rates of return over and above our actuarial assumptions as we go forward, which would be an added benefit to getting better funding.
Yep.
So, I mean, it was a big discussion on asset allocation, more work to do there. Kind of when we were talking about, we're in no rush. We kind of had this long-term asset allocation and target private markets that we've been so far away from, and we're inching closer. But, you know, let's take our time and kind of get everyone aligned at the IAC, then we'll move up to the board to look at that.
Okay. All right. We're good to move on to item 8, the real estate AEW.
All right.
Josh, how are we going to do this with closed session?
I have a quick intro, and then we'll move over to closed session. Usually we have Ron go first because it's a very dense portfolio and we get into some detail on it, but I'll give a quick intro. AEW manages a real estate portfolio that they took over in 2015 from CDK, with one large complex investment remaining with Red Consolidated Holdings, which is a 50-50 real estate operating company based in Phoenix that's a PPF of Tampa. There's numerous
Do you
want
to go to
one
more slide?
Oh.
I've
got to
get Brendan.
Oh, okay. I was looking at my paper. That's in front of me, it's on the screen at all times. So, RCA, I almost look at it more like a private equity assignment for Ron and his team because they're managing a company that owns a bunch of real estate, you know, in various structures. And then Campbell Square is the other one we've talked quite a bit about the last 3 years. That was a real estate property, land that got redeveloped based in Phoenix. We've got $69 million in proceeds back on that and sold out of that completely. 2021, there's been $171 million that has come out of the agent portfolio back to us, so that is just under half of the total proceeds we've received up on the private side. So this portfolio has driven quite a bit of the activity we've seen. So with that, we'll move over to closed session and hand it off to Ron.